Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we have with us Francois Dignot from the Academy of Cuisine in Gaithersburg. I apologize, I inaccurately said it was in Bethesda, but you guys used to be in Bethesda.
We still are. We're both locations.
Oh,
The avocational.
So I've been
class,
wrong twice.
No, you're right both times.
You're very positive.
We have the original location in Bethesda, which is now run by our daughter, who is the avocational program. And we have the professional program, which is run by my wife and I, in Gaithersburg. So we still have both locations.
So you and your wife are the tough ones.
Yes, the big one.
I won't tell your daughter you said that.
Well, she can hear. She'll hear.
She's going to hear
fine.
This.
So
fine.
Well, I guess you're busted. We started to have a conversation, Cindy and I, recently about what it was like working in kitchens for us, you know, as a teenager. And first working in the business as a teenager for us, you know, I guess like, you know, 79, 80, 81 for me. And I worked for a Danish man who was maybe not the nicest man in the entire world. But boy, you learn to work very quickly and you learn to clean very seriously. Mm-hmm. I had a German great-grandmother that was the same way. I mean, the executive housekeeping class I took in hotel school, my great-grandmother was a lot tougher than the instructor in that class. Mm-hmm. Tell us about, you know, working in kitchens when you first came up. What was the culture like at that time, and where were you?
Well, it was very tough, and the teachers, I mean, the chefs were very tough. I mean, I remember being kicked in the butt on occasion. I remember one chef.
You mean really? Yeah, which is horrifying. I've heard of people getting kicked.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Like that was common back in the day.
And we were trained by fear.
Oh my God! You were trained by fear.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
yeah. That still went on.
Kind of lorded over, right? Yeah.
Thank God that's over. But sometime we should have still some kind of, and that's why we at school keep a certain amount of discipline. But I remember being slapped in the face by the maitre d' because he didn't like the way I was cleaning the wine glasses.
Wow.
So, or maybe I think I'd broken one by drying it, and he came and slapped me in the face in the kitchen in front of all the cooks and everybody else. And I had to keep my hands in my pocket because if I would do anything, I would be fired from school.
Things you can't see on the radio. My smile from thinking about all of the things that happened, because I worked with a lot of people from prior generations and a lot of Europeans back in the day in the business when I was a kid. In Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And the other thing you can't see in the radio is me pointing at my hand, which is I still have a scar on my hand from where Pierre, my chef from Alsace in Philadelphia, stabbed me in the hand for speaking in the kitchen.
Oh God.
So I would always
that
have,
wasn't that long ago.
But, no.
That was
probably 85.
Okay. All right.
85, 86. Yeah. So I do have a little reminder on my right hand every day of you'd be quiet in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm. Well, at that time the cooks were nobody. The cooks were, you know, they were not star. The chef even were not star.
No.
If you remember the big restaurant, the top restaurants in the 50s when I grew up, you knew the name of the restaurant, but you never knew the name of the chef, unless it was the chef owner. So it's when the Nouvelle Cuisine came about, the Paul Bocuse area, when they decided to have all the plates plated instead of French served, and the waiter put the food on the plate. Then the chef used their own imagination and their own
creativity.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, to make a beautiful dish. So mm-hmm. now,
well, you weren't just a cook, but people started thinking of you as an artist.
Well, that's a huge transition to go from the waiters plating the food in the dining room mm-hmm. in front of the guests to the chefs doing it in the kitchen. That's part of the Nouvelle movement.
That's when the Nouvelle Cuisine started, and I think it was a great idea because it changed a lot. Of course, the Nouvelle Cuisine 10 or 15 years later become not quite as Nouvelle because a lot of young chefs who didn't have a background thought that because they were creative, they could go and start putting beautiful things on the plate, never mind what it tastes when it's if it's cooked properly. So that's when the Nouvelle Cuisine started to fade out, at least in France. And we went back to the cuisine du terroir, which is the cooking from the ground. What is it that, and it's where I was raised. We, you know, even in Lausanne, when I was there, I did my cooking part in the winter. We didn't have vegetable then. It was in the early 60s. I never worked with a fresh asparagus at school because we didn't have asparagus in the winter. We didn't have tomatoes. It's after, you know, because of my two grandparents, my two sets of grandparents had farms, and we lived in the summer, we lived in the farm, and we ate what came out of the ground, what came out of the river next to us, or what they were shooting in the fall, or what shooting, you know. So that's where we grew up, and it's such a great thing to see that now chefs have decided or want to do the same thing. That's fantastic, because in the 80s, 90s, nobody cared about farm. Everybody wanted to buy food that came supplied by the trucks from
delivered
the big
in
companies.
Plastic.
Right, exactly.
That's something that I know for me, my great-grandmother was born in 1890, and she grew up on a farm, and she went to market. She went to market mm-hmm. every day. She didn't care. And if it wasn't there and it wasn't fresh and didn't smell right, she wasn't buying it. She wasn't cooking it.
Actually, at that time, there was no market.
Lexington Market, there would be produce people that would show up with whatever.
But
in season. And it's that's something that as time has gone by, we now work with 24 different farmers. And the first segment of the program was just about what's in season right now, how it's different from last summer, the previous summer. And we were sort of joking about the mystery basket of, you know, Cindy comes Monday and there's a whole bunch of stuff I put in her walk-in on Sunday from market. It's a bit of a mystery basket, mm-hmm. which made me wonder.
Which I enjoy greatly,
sure.
walking in and
yeah.
seeing all this beautiful product.
Which made me wonder, was there a cooking test that you had when you were in culinary school? Was the one that you dreaded or were excited about?
Well, yeah, we had a few. There was the exams. The practical exam, that was always very tough. But I was good at that. I was very good. I was not a great book student. So, and that's why most of us end up in the kitchen is because we were not
exactly.
book smart.
Exactly.
Opposed to I have two brothers which are very book smart.
It's a different kind of clever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So,
it
I mean,
is.
This is what we did in France when we were kids at 14 years old. People, parents, and teachers would have to make a decision. Do you go to high school and college, or do you go learn a craft, become a cabinet maker, become an electrician, become a cook, become a pastry cook? And that's how we did it. So we started extremely young. I didn't do that. I did work when I was 16, 17, but I had the honor of going to hotel school. But We did work very hard. I remember working in a hotel, and you know, we were in line. We were perfectly dressed. We couldn't say a word. We could not move our head the wrong way. I mean, it's like being in the army, and having to perform in front of the public. And we were in the kitchen, so it was a good time.
How many people would have been in that kitchen working the line?
Well, it's a hotel, so we were 85. Not the line. The mm-hmm. lines, it was mostly banquet, a lot of banquet.
Okay.
So, but it was a great experience. But also, I worked in a restaurant in New Jersey, the Manor in West Orange, New Jersey, which when I left in 74, we were grossing $16 million a year, and it was mostly banquet, and mostly prime rib and baked potato and Caesar salad, but it was the best food that you can get at that time for the volume. We served 2,500 lunch and 2,500 dinner. And that was a key to serve a beautiful prime rib, perfectly cooked. We had 24 ovens to cook all those prime ribs. So
when you first came here, what products were you missing from France that we didn't have?
Fruits. My grandfather in the east of France had an orchard, and he had every tree, every fruit tree available. And we grew up by going and eat the tree when they were in sea. If you are there early, it's the apricot. If you're in the middle, it's the
Mirabelle,
the prunes, the and then the end, the peach, the grapes. So we ate, you know. And when I came, I remember coming to a supermarket first year I was here and go and look for the produce station. I couldn't find it. And somebody said, it's over there in the corner. And on the other little corner, and there were potato, carrots, iceberg lettuce.
Well, onions and lemons, right?
Onions and lettuce, right?
And if you had fruit, it was a pear, which was the solid rock. And I tried to buy a pear and bite on it, and I never had a good pear. I was in San Francisco 2 weeks ago to do a class for my nephew, and I went to a farm in Napa, and we went to pick our carrots and our turnips and wash them and peel them. That was the first time I did this in years, and I was like,
so nice.
I was so happy.
Yes, indeed. Well, I know when Jean-Louis Peladon came here, he was, he was probably horrified at the lack of things as simple as a chanterelle mushroom to you, or a shallot, you know, or fresh herbs. Mm-hmm. They just weren't available to professional chefs.
He was a great mentor to me.
Oh.
He was. He taught that class in Bethesda for 10 years. Every Tuesday, first Tuesday of the month, he would teach a class.
He was a great chef.
He was incredible. And I saw when he made his book, he would bring the food, and then the photographer said, Fred Maroon said, what are you going to do, Jean-Louis? He says, I don't know. I don't know yet. So he says, see what he has, like you on Monday opening your refrigerator. And he would cook, and Fred Maroon says, how are you going to present it? I don't know yet.
Yeah, I mean,
things are coming up.
With good things come in the back door. That's use your mind and your hands, and you make the food.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
Mm-hmm. He was a great chef.
Oh, he was incredible.
I didn't realize he cooked or instructed at your school. That's fantastic. What a great opportunity your students had to learn from him.
Oh, yes.
Great man. One of the youngest 3-star Michelin chefs during his time, I believe he was.
He was the youngest.
He left and came to the U.S. then.
Yes, and then the one who became the youngest after that was Gérard Pongo, a two-star and it's funny because Gérard also taught for 2 years in my school.
Very
he
good.
Was a teacher in phase one. So I was very blessed to be around these guys because, I mean, you learned so much. And I think Jean-Louis was the most, he didn't know what he was going to do until it came as he was cooking.
He was a pretty pure guy.
Oh,
I had a chance
to
work with him a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think, to change gears entirely, what do you think is going to happen in the next decade of culinary education in the U.S.? What do you think is going to change? What do you think is going to evolve?
I think, unfortunately, the what we know as fine dining, I don't like that word, but is going to slow down a little bit, unfortunately, because of many reasons. It's slowing down in France because of the health department doesn't want you to keep your stocks overnight, so you have to make new stocks every morning and throw them out at night, which is absolutely ridiculous. I see here in this country, a lot of restaurants do not make the classic sauces that we still make. We still teach our students to do.
Yeah.
Some do, but that's
very,
the.
Yeah, you're
so
right.
Which you don't know is that Cindy has the soul of a 150-year-old Frenchman.
I do.
Right.
Yeah.
We are the dinosaur. The dinosaur.
You're right. I feel like a dinosaur sometimes because I do. I cook in a very old world way, and
that's
the only way I want to cook.
The problem is, I go to sometimes called fine dining restaurant American cooking, and there's no sauces.
You're right.
The sauce is there is some kind of a salsa or some kind of a sweet things, but there's no sauce. There's no.
It's my favorite part
so
of cooking.
So that's the thing I can see, and for many reasons, because of health department. I mean, we had our health department come in the kitchen the other day, and we have a chicken stock we just finished, and it was in a refrigerator. We didn't cool it before we put it in the refrigerator. She put a thermometer in there. She says, throw it out. Can't keep it. So we had to throw everything out. I mean, it's so this is going to change. Also, the fact that we can't buy food on the whole. In other words, most restaurants will buy fish already filleted. It's a good quality, but it's already filleted. Number one, because the cooks don't know how to fillet fish. I'm teaching some chefs now, chefs of a bunch of restaurants in Washington. Some of those chefs, we give them a fish to fillet, and they couldn't fillet a fish. And I said, when was the last time you filleted a fish? He says, when I was in school. The reason also, and in meat, it's the same thing. The meat, it's even worse because big companies who had to deliver primal cuts of meat still on their bones, and that happened when the first gas price went crazy. They had to send two or three 18-wheelers, and now they put everything off the bone. They reduce the volume, the weight. And they send out. So now when I have to teach a whole loin of pork.
I've never seen it.
I want on the bone. It's a special order.
Yeah.
Yeah, that has changed.
They've never seen it. So I will admit we've done the entire program without any wine. And usually we don't drink wine usually during the program. But what I mean is the program's about food and wine. So in 30 seconds. What is your holy grail wine? What is the wine that you love most in the world?
Well, of course they're French because I'm French and because I know them. I'm very partial with Burgundy because my grandfather, my father was born in Burgundy, had a place in Burgundy, so I know the Burgundian wine more than the others. I had a chance to taste them. Plus Chardonnay and Pinot Noir are, to me, the two wines that you cannot live without.
Great.
That's an appropriate Bourguignon attitude. So, what is the best Burgundy you ever had?
The best
Burgundy, your favorite Burgundy you've ever had?
Latache.
Latache.
Latache in 1958.
All right.
That was the bottle.
Ooh, nice.
And but I do go back to. We do take trips to France, and we go to Burgundy. We go in a Chateau, and we visit Claude Rougeau, we visit all the Burgundy houses.
Well, the next time we see you, one of the restaurants, we're going to have to open a nice bottle, maybe not Latache, but a nice wine from Bourgogne.
Yes, sure. So,
thank you very much, François.
Yes, thank
My
you,
pleasure.
François. Thank you, Chef, very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Cindy Wolf.
Have a great week.